You're listening to the Food Talk Show. My name's Sue Nelson and this is the Food Talk Show, and we're here at Olympia for our second day, although it's the third day of the actual fair itself. We're at Speciality Fine Food Fair. 700 stalls here, all sorts of people selling things from beer to crickets to, I can see some curry over there, spices, jams, chocolate, you name it. And it's a really good place to see where all the innovation is happening and what's new, particularly in the innovation zone. And we're going to speak to a whole number of people today, just to give you a flavour of some of the things that are at the show. So let's start off with Rob Fink from Big Drop Brewing Company. Non-alcoholic beer, is that the future? Now, Harry, I'm with Harry, our producer. You're a little bit of a beer drinker, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, mostly lager, so yeah, not really the niche craft, but you know, I'm willing to give it a try.
You're a lager boy, aren't you?
A lager lout, yeah.
A lager lout, yeah. I quite like the craft beers, I have to say. And I, if I do go out, I sort of order bitter. I prefer that because I'm more grown up than you, Harry. No, I'm joking. I think it's different types of tastes, isn't it? And you know, I personally don't find many non-alcoholic alternatives that I really like. I don't know if you have, you know, if you're driving or something like that.
Yeah, no, I tend to just not drink at all if it's going to be a case of driving, because like we've discussed before, the Heinekens, the Becks, and they're just watered down. They don't have any sort of real taste to them, and they're just, yeah, not a good alternative.
Well, we're not going to get any funding from them in the future, are we? Well done for that. I'll probably get loads of letters as well. Thanks. I tend to agree with you. I think they're okay, but I always get this aftertaste, a little bit like washing up liquid. And even BrewDog's Nanny State, which I was holding out great hopes for, doesn't really do it for me. Have you tried that one?
I haven't actually tried that one, no. But, we've got one in front of us, which I think maybe we should try.
We have got one in front of us, and we're with Rob Fink, and he owns the Big Drop Brewing Company. Is it your first show? Is that a Speciality and Fine Food Fair show, Rob?
It is my first show, yes. I haven't been here before.
And how long have you been doing the Big Drop Brewing Company?
Big Drop is almost exactly 1 year old.
1 year old. Now, I know, because we went onto your stand, I know that you've caused a bit of a stir here, because people are tasting it and can't believe that this is actually okay. Tastes all right. Tastes like beer.
Well, it's very nice, actually, because we're two types of people. Either those who seek us out, who have heard the good things that are being said about us, and the people that I am waylaying and demanding that they taste my beer, who start off cynical, but happily by the end of it are converted.
So they're the sceptics. It could be me, so I'll have to try that in a minute. And also, you were saying to me earlier as well that very interesting is the farm shop buyer, because what they're doing is that they're stocking a load of craft beers, the sorts of stuff you don't normally get in a supermarket, but they really are looking for something non-alcoholic to put next to those, aren't they?
That's right, yeah. It's been probably the biggest lesson I've learned from the show is the number of farm shop and deli buyers who have come up and said, yes, this is what we're looking for. We know that we need a low alcohol and alcohol free option, but we don't want to put the big brands next to the craft beers, the local beers that we're selling as our alcoholic option.
Because it doesn't really fit with what they're trying to achieve, is it? They're trying to champion local, you know, a niche and whatever, and then having, you know, sort of blue label, whatever it's called. What's it? Bud? Is it Bud that does blue label?
Bex Blue.
That's right, Bex Blue. No matter how you might like Bex Blue, it doesn't really fit in a farm shop when you're trying to promote craft and local beer, does it?
No, I don't think so. I think it has its place, but certainly, yes, farm shops, delis, they're selling craft beer, handcrafted products, niche products, and I think we happily seem to be fitting that gap on their shelves.
Well, we're going to try a little taste. Now, I know that you've got four, I think, different types of beer. You've got a stout and a pale ale, a lager and a spiced ale. And these are all 0.5%, less than 0.5% ABV. So that means how many of those can you drink before you're not allowed to drive? About 100.
I decline to give advice on how much people can drink before they can drive. But if you consider they are on average 0.5%, so you would drink 8 of those before you would consume the equivalent of a bottle of 4% beer. But whilst you're drinking those, of course, your body is processing the alcohol. And actually, you would do very well to drink eight of these beers in one sitting.
Be on the loo the whole time, yeah. If it was me.
Yes, you'd spend a lot of time on the loo, regardless of how delicious they are. You know, four in a night is probably enough, which is the equivalent of a 2% bottle of beer.
So, Harry, if you'd like to try. So we've got pale ale while I'm talking. Oh, Christ, I've just spilt some. Don't worry about that. It's all over your trousers, but don't worry. So you've got the pale ale and you've got stout. So tell me the difference. So what is a stout exactly, a normal stout?
A stout is a dark beer. It's a black beer. It's made with particular malts, roasted malts, to give it the dark colour. This is a milk stout. Which means that it has lactose added. It's a particular style of beer, very popular amongst beer fans. The lactose gives it sweetness, but importantly for us, the lactose also gives it the body that you do lose by having such low ABV. So you'll get coffee notes, you'll get chocolate, it has cocoa nibs in there, and a slight sweetness.
And then we've got the pale ale. What's the difference between pale ale and lager?
Pale ale is it's a very highly hopped beer, generally. A lager, German style of beer, very clean, crisp, refreshing, but actually it doesn't have a big nose. There's not a lot of aromas on a lager, and there aren't big flavours there, and that's fine. That's what lagers are supposed to be. Whereas you drink a pale ale, a hopped pale ale, and you'll get those aromas from adding what nowadays became very popular, which is American hops. So actually in these, and indeed in this beer, we're using the American hops that you would usually find in that particular style rather than English hops.
And that's because of the flavour profile you're trying to create, rather than, you know, you're not using British. It's actually about what consumers consider pale ale to be, and the pale ale taste to be.
Exactly. They were popularised when American craft beer scene was brought over here, and those styles of beer did become and have remained very popular.
Jolly good. Now, I've just tasted stout. I actually like stout. You probably have never had stout, have you, Harry?
No, I've never had stout.
So it's not really much point in you tasting it, because you don't know the difference, do you?
What I will say is it's the stout that I've just had, the clearer one, isn't it? One of my favourite actual lagers, and obviously not the same, is Leff, the strong Belgian beer. And I think one of the reasons why I like that is because it's quite a strong flavour. It's not really watered down like, you know, obviously the stuff that you get in the supermarket. That one that I've just had, the flavour's really come through. It's I can tell it's not sort of just watery, it's not chemically. You can really get the flavours come through. And then obviously the pale, I can really see what you mean by the coffee notes as well.
And stouts as well, so it's got that sort of very dark, malty, if you can taste that.
Yeah, it's definitely more flavoursome than lager, I'd say. Maybe I'll have to give it a go full time.
Oh, bit crap. Right, so I'm just going to taste the pale ale, which should be nice and hoppy.
Yeah.
Again, I prefer stout, actually, but yes, I can see what you mean. That is really got that American hop taste. That's great. Now, it's very, very, very difficult to achieve a low, very, very low alcohol beer and manage to get this taste. Now, I know that what you do is you use a different process in order to make this happen. So can you explain to us how you would normally make a beer and then what you're trying to do in order to get that taste profile but still get rid of the alcohol?
Yep. So we are... The reason that we keep the 0.5% in there rather than going down to a true 0% is that by keeping that 0.5 in there, it allows us to brew the beer fundamentally in exactly the same way as you would brew any other beer. If you try and take it any lower than that, you have to do something to the beer to get it below that ABV. And there's a number of ways that you can do that. The way that they used to do it in the good old days, which is why some beers had such a bad name, was to heat it. And that destroys the character of the beer, because you're not just removing the alcohol, but you're also removing some of the flavour components that you associate with the beer.
Exactly the same if you were doing orange juice or any of those, you know, fruit juices. A lot of people we know do cold pressed, because if you don't, you lose all the nutrients, you know, really.
That's right, exactly. And so we decided very early on that we would just brew our beer exactly the same way as you brew normal beer, but we do three things differently. The first is that we use what I call a lazy yeast. So the yeast is the organism that turns the sugar in the starting liquid into alcohol. Lazy yeast doesn't do that. It's very bad at that. So it's not a yeast that you would expect to find brewers using, because brewers actually want to convert sugar into alcohol. We don't. We then brew at various points in our brew at much higher temperatures than you again would expect to find. And what that means is the lazy yeast becomes even lazier, because it's effectively making it bask in 30 degree sunshine, and that just means it wants to lie down and read a book, rather than again converting the sugar into the alcohol. We add lactose unapologetically to our product, because that gives it body that you don't have by having such a low ABV. And we also use more grains than you would typically expect to find in beer. So we're using not just malted barley, but we're using wheat, we're using rye, we even use oats in one of our beer, and that just gives it a complexity, more of a backbone to make it stand up against its stronger compatriots.
Well, I think they're very successful. I don't know about you, Harry, because it is difficult to find something that really tastes decent, but you can take somewhere out, you know, out and be able to drive, you know, or just decide to have less alcohol anyway.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. Obviously, with the whole sort of drink driving is obviously a terrible thing, but previously people just have stuck away from it because they, you know, it's either one or nothing at all, whereas people enjoy the taste of beer, they want to have it, but obviously they feel like they can't. So it's a good thing obviously if we've got more flavoursome things coming through, so that, you know, people have that choice. I think
Wayne Rooney could have done with having a few of these, couldn't he? Don't you think?
Yeah.
It's going to save him a fortune, wouldn't it?
Yeah, hopefully his lawyers aren't listening to this, but yeah, possibly.
Allegedly. So Rob, sorry about that. If you go onto bigdropbrew.com, you can find all of Rob's amazing beers, and you've already started winning awards, and you're only going for a year, so that just shows what the taste profile is. I'm sure Mr. Rooney's lawyers will be in contact fairly soon, but in the meantime, if you'd like to try some of these, do go on the website. Thanks very much again, Rob.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
I'm sitting opposite the lovely Natasha Steele. Hello, Natasha.
Hello, how are you going?
Good. Now, I have to admit, I am not a great fan of cordials. I was a kid brought up with Ribena, really. That's why I got no teeth. These are all false. No, I'm joking. But, the choices of cordial were not very good, and very, very sweet, laden with sugar, I think. And since then, I've never really been able to find what I would describe as a grown-up cordial. But I've come across Natasha because she's got the Urban Cordial Company, and I went to try some of these yesterday, so I've got her on the programme today because I tried, I think it was the pear and ginger, and I really like that. So why did you start making cordials? Is it the same background for you?
So I worked in the city for a small company called Deloitte for 3 years.
They're not small, are they?
No, they're pretty massive. And in the weekends I have an allotment, and I would forage for ingredients and make different things with them, and one of the things I make was cordial. And you go to your friends' places, you take some chocolate, I would just take a bottle of cordial that I made, and one day thought maybe I should start selling them just as a hobby for some extra pocket money.
Did anybody say to you, can you not bring wine like everybody else?
No. Yeah, they like something a little bit different. They expected it from me. So I foraged all of the ingredients and made 250 bottles, and they sold in 3 days of Christmas markets.
So you know you're onto winner then. Is that because they're selling to parents, or are they selling to grown-ups, or both?
Both, yeah. But my first customer, I don't remember her name, but I remember exactly what she looks like, and she bought a blackberry and lavender bottle for a gift hamper that she was making for a wedding, so for adults, because the flavours are so different and they're not sweet.
So I'm looking at our website here, and we've got a whole number. So we've got pear and ginger, which I tasted yesterday, blackberry and lavender, apple, lemon and fennel, rhubarb and ginger, plum and star anise, apricot and cardamom. So I can just go on and on. There's loads of them, isn't there? And you bought a couple for me to taste. So what have I got in front of me?
So I've bought you raspberry and rosemary, which is the pink one. That won a Great Taste Award last year. You'll note that it's not sweet, it's quite earthy. The rosemary just comes in at the end. It doesn't overpower the raspberry, and you can really taste that raspberry flavour in there.
And in terms of watering it down, what do you recommend? Do you recommend, is there sort of an optimum, you know, ratio that you should have with water?
So this is diluted at 1:6. I drink them at 1:7. For me, that's too strong. It might be because I have to drink them all the time.
Okay.
So I'm so used to them. But people are so used to cordials being overly sweet. We dilute it at 1:6, so they kind of get that they're not sweet, but they have that strength and kick in them.
So that's a top tip now for everybody who's listening. If you've got cordial, it's 1:6, chaps, if you want to get it right. That was lovely. And as you say, you just get the lavender at the end.
I meant rosemary
at the end.
Yeah, you just get it at the end. And that flavour we use, fresh rosemary. So a lot of the flavours we use the dried herbs, but fresh, you just can't beat fresh rosemary. It's too good.
And it's so pungent, it's lovely. And then what's the other one that you've got for me to try?
So this one is apple, lemon and fennel. That won a Great Taste Award this year. It's my favourite flavour. It's just delicious.
Now, I grow fennel in my allotment, and it just goes like crazy, doesn't it? It's almost like a, I don't know, weed, really. Do you use the tops? Is that right?
We actually use the seeds. So when you cook with fennel, it loses a lot of the aniseed flavour of it. So and because cordial, you're cooking it down to turn it into a concentrate. So we experimented with fresh, and you just didn't get any of that flavour across. So we use the seeds.
Well, that tastes lovely, but you've got to like fennel, which is that aniseedy thing. It goes really well with apple, doesn't it? I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah. There's like those continental style salads where you have like apple, fennel on walnut and things. So yeah. It's not that well known in England, but I think it's used quite a lot in France and places.
I think Hugh Fernie Whittingstall's trying to get us to eat load more salads. He seems to put a lot of fennel in his, doesn't he?
It was amazing. I don't know. If you don't like fennel, you're weird.
If you don't like fennel, you're weird. That's an interesting comment. So we've got all these lovely cordials. They've got a really nice packaging, actually. Very simple, but it's the flavourings that's important. And how many have you got in the range now?
So we have 5 flavours that are available pretty much throughout the whole year, and then we have a whole range of seasonal flavours. So our seasonal ones will range from apricot and cardamom, cherry and black pepper, plum and star anise, and then the ones available all year are pear and ginger, apple, lemon and fennel, apple and blackberry.
Because apple and pears keep for ages if you correctly store them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I would recommend them, especially if you've got children, but actually maybe you're trying to do a sort of dry Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday during the week. It's a good alternative, isn't it, to drinking some alcohol, and it's got a really nice taste to it. And I presume you can use sparkling water and stuff like that, not just a boring old water.
Yeah, so on the back of all of our bottles, we say, why not try one of our cordials with your spirit of choice? We like gin, and they also go really well with sparkling water. So it's getting people to see that you don't just have to mix cordial have it as a soft drink. And on our website, we have a recipe section. It's just pure cocktail recipes.
Well, I must go on to that bit, mustn't I? Very good. They're really, really nice, and well done to you. And if you go onto the website, it's theurbancordialcompany.com. And where can we find these at the moment? I know you're branching out more and more.
Yeah, so they're in Selfridges, and they're in a range of independents, and they're on a range of menus in different bars and restaurants, mainly in London. The end of the buying them off the shelf is across the UK, but the restaurants is currently London centric.
And if you go on your website, you'll find where all the stockists are anyway.
Yeah, there's the stockist section.
Okay, well, good luck with it. It makes a change to see somebody who's doing something different. So there's nobody else that's doing cordials here, I don't think.
No.
Excellent. Good for you.
Thank you.
Good luck with it. Thanks very much. I'm with Liz Bezic, and I'm really interested in this because anybody listening to the show knows I'm a little bit partial to gin, but this isn't just any old gin. It's called collagen. And I'm presuming it's called collagen because it's got collagen in. Have I got that correct, Liz?
You have. This is the world's first gin distilled with edible collagen. And we also love a pun, hence why we thought it was genius to put a bit of changed collagen to collagen.
So this is, it's sort of making me laugh. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh.
No.
But it is making me laugh because collagen is the stuff that stops you from being so wrinkled. Have I got that right? That's not very technical, is it?
Yeah, so collagen is naturally found in our skin and it sadly deteriorates over the age of 25. But by...
Just fall into that bracket.
You or me?
Me.
Well, I'm actually 80, but I'd have collagen every day, so it does work.
Amazing.
It does work. But basically by consuming collagen, you're encouraging the production of your own skin's collagen. But we are an alcohol brand, so we're always saying, look, we're not claiming anything health related, but if you're going to drink gin, which everyone is doing because it's on the UK consumer shopping list now, you might as well enjoy it with the benefits of collagen in it.
And collagen's the stuff that actually makes your joints supple and all that sort of stuff. It's not just about your skin, is it? It's the sort of moisturising thing that holds us all together before we get all old and dry and haggard. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's known more for its skin properties, but yeah, it does help with joints. And you can, it's available to buy in supermarkets in a powder form, capsule, already mixed with water. There's actually some brilliant brands here today who have already mixed it with coffee and other soft drinks, but no one's doing it with alcohol just yet, just us.
And the thing with collagen as well, it's quite difficult to absorb, actually. So it's quite difficult to put on your skin and absorb because of the layers in your skin. So actually the best way to have collagen is to ingest it. That's what I was told. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is true. And also if you're drinking it, then it is going all over your body. It's very topical when you're applying it. And we use a bovine collagen, which is easier to digest than a marine collagen.
So, I mean, I'm really sorry. I think this is hilarious. So I'm trying to save my skin while at the same time damaging it, probably.
Absolutely. They balance each other out. It's totally fine.
So so you thought of this. What were you, how on earth, were you brainstorming with a bunch of girls out one night? Or where did this come from?
It wasn't a brainstorm. So my co-founder Camilla and I used to work in PR and we were doing a creative brainstorm for a client on how to create a brand new product which combines two popular worlds and gets people talking. This kind of, we combined the two worlds, we looked at the trends, what's rising, gin's rising, what's rising, beauty, what's rising within beauty, collagen, combine the two together.
Can we do lipstick in gin? No, that's not going to work. Can we do, what can we do?
We have had some brilliant suggestions on our social media of what our next product should be. We would love to do other spirits, but we definitely want to conquer the gin world first.
Conquer the gin world. So you're a PR person. Mm-hmm. I've just had a little slug. Oh, wow.
It's 40%.
I know it's 40%. I've just found that out. I shouldn't have drunk that neat, really, should I? So you've got gin. What on earth is, and you're a PR person, what is the target market? Or are you just having a bit of fun?
No, definitely not having fun. This is a very serious product. So we, at first, we thought our target market was 30 to sort of 60, 60 years old and ABC1, but then our recent sales figures are showing it's 24 and up, and mostly we've kind of had about 60-40 split on men and women. So it's men buying this either for themselves or presents for wives, girlfriends, mothers, mother-in-laws. So
I think it's the men buying it for themselves because secretly, let's face it, they're more vain than we are, really.
This is true, and it's a very smooth, soft gin, so it's not quite as harsh as the other gins on the market. So maybe the men actually quite enjoy that they don't have to pretend to have a very harsh gin.
Well, around the corner from where I live, there's a gin bar. Sells 64 different gins. It's tiny. It's brilliant. And the lady who's in there, she doesn't know about wine. And her husband started it as a microbrewery. Her partner, not husband. And she didn't know what to do, so she thought she'd offer a little bit of gin, just basically to annoy him, actually. But also, she wanted her part in the business. She said she couldn't believe how many guys were drinking gin. Particularly at the end of an evening, and not necessarily with a mixer, but actually on its own with ice. And so I do think it's drunk perhaps slightly differently. I know we're generalising here, but it definitely is a male and female drink.
Yeah, definitely, and especially as sipping gin, which is ours can be a sipping gin. Yeah, I agree. I've seen many men having it with just ice, and we've been at, my partner and I, husband, has been at a lot of weddings this year, and I've noticed the guests are drinking no longer champagne and Prosecco, they're all drinking G&Ts, which is great to see.
So sipping gin means that when you can't be bothered to water it down. Is that what it's called? Sipping gin? I must remember that.
Gin on ice, and yeah, very easy to drink.
So where do people get hold of this collagen? Where is it available?
So we're mainly online at the moment because we only launched in March this year. Drink Supermarket, Amazon, 31 Dover. We're also going to be on Littlewoods and Ferry, and we're talking to a department store. So fingers crossed for that.
And you should be able to PR the hell out of it, knowing you two then.
Yes, we are enjoying that. But we also, we just love getting out about and meeting people. I think that's the most important thing. We need people to try it. Once they see it and try it, they realise, wow, this is actually a product not worth talking about, but worth buying as well.
And it's really good because you're not actually ever going to tell whether it's made any difference to your skin till about 10 years later.
Exactly. And, you know, it helps with the fear the next day when you realise you've had a bit too much to drink.
Well, that's a great, great fun and great idea. It's really nice to speak to you, Liz. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So there you have it. Some really interesting stories from Urban Cordial and Big Drop Brew and Collagen. So that's all drinks in one go. We're now going to talk to the lovely, lovely girls from Chocolate Smiths. They are so funny. Really like their product, and they deserve to succeed because they're just so passionate. Slightly bonkers, and the lovely, really delicious curries from Agra. See what you think. So, about 100 years ago, I used to be a student in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, which was quite an experience for somebody who was born in inner city London and spent quite a lot of their life in London, because I genuinely did not understand a word anybody said. It was like being in a foreign country. But Newcastle is famous for its warmth of hospitality and its great people. And so I'm very pleased to be joined by Steffi and Amy. Are you from Newcastle, or are you just based in Newcastle?
No, we're from Newcastle, born and bred. Yes.
Born and bred. Okay. So you call yourself the creative director, Amy. What does that mean?
Basically, I design all the packaging. So everything in terms of the branding and the look of the company I kind of deal with.
And how would you describe that look? Because you sort of, it feels to me like you're harking back to an old fashioned, honest, truthful era. Have I got that right?
Yeah, definitely. We thought we'd go for something that's a little bit like fairgroundy and a bit circusy, and just something a bit more fun. Like, you know, it's chocolate at the end of the day, and that should be something exciting, not something really kind of stiff and boring.
And that's what I haven't mentioned yet. You're into chocolate, but you're not into any old chocolate, the pair of you. You're into interestingly strange chocolate, and there's lots of chocolate manufacturers here, but yours is very different, I think, in terms of your flavours. So would you like to just describe, you brought me three samples here, would you like to describe to me what they are?
Yeah, we've got a bubblegum sundae in white chocolate drizzled with butterscotch infused dark chocolate and some Madagascan vanilla in there, so it's all the good stuff. It's one of our favourites.
That's not too off the wall, that one. It's fairly okay, bubble gummish.
Yeah, it is. The look of the bar is amazing when you open it. It's pink and blue on the front, and it's got multicoloured sprinkles. So it reminds you of like a traditional ice cream sundae, but bubblegum flavoured. So it's a bit out there in terms of the look. We've got the maple bacon, which is probably a bit more strange.
So this is bacon chocolate, chaps. Bacon chocolate.
Yes, bacon chocolate. It's got some maple flavour in there, some rock salt, some butterscotch, and a bit of smokiness for the bacon. It's really subtle, but the flavours balance really, really well. And then we've got the cheese and crackers, which is probably the most out there. So it's a cheddar cheese flavour with crunchy crackers and milk chocolate. And when you initially smell it, it smells really cheesy. When you taste it, you can't taste any cheese. And once you've swallowed it, it tastes like you've eaten cheese.
Well, crackers is it really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you are crackers. And are you the chocolatier?
Amy and myself both started the business, and Amy designed the packaging while I sort of made the chocolate from my home kitchen. And then Amy came on full time and both started making chocolate together. So we've always been the chocolatiers of the business as well. And we have two more staff as well, which are fantastic, and they are brilliant chocolatiers too, that we've trained up to sort of make the weird flavours alongside.
And these are bars of chocolate, so you're not got a sort of little chocolate pieces or a mouthful of chocolate like Thornton's or something. These are bars that you've made.
Yeah, these are 100 gram chocolate bars, so they're quite chunky, but really delicious. I know I would eat 100 grams of chocolate, no problem. Do on a daily basis, both of us do. So yeah.
Well, you look remarkably slim for somebody who eats 100 grams of chocolate a day. So. I've just taken a taste of the cheese and cracker chocolate. It's gluten, soya-free and dairy-free?
No, those are the allergens.
So you've got an allergy, you're stuffed, you can't have this one. So cheese and crackers. There's a little bit of mustard in there I can taste. It does smell cheesy, which is weird.
Yeah, it does smell really, really cheesy, but when you put it in your mouth, you can't really taste the cheese. It's sort of in the background, and once you've swallowed it, then you can taste the cheese then, yeah.
Well, you've just described that, and I would never believe it, but it's absolutely true. It's just insane. Okay, I'm going to try the bacon, the bacon chocolate, and I can smell a little bit of bacon there, and a little bit of maple. Actually, Steph is just going, how do you make bacon maple chocolate?
We can't tell you, it's a secret, secret of the trade. Yeah, but
has it got animal bits in?
It hasn't got animal bits in it. No, it's actually suitable for vegetarians as well. So it's just sort of a smoky flavour. But we use all natural flavourings. There's no sort of really weird E numbers in anything, apart from the bubblegum, because it has some colour in it. Yeah.
Well, again, I don't really know how to describe it. So it's not overtly bacon-ish. It's got a nice little smoky tinge, actually, with a tiny, tiny sense of bacon on it. And I can taste a little bit of maple there.
Oh yeah, we made the maple quite strong because we wanted it to be the most sort of prominent flavour, and then the bacon just to hit you sort of afterwards, and you think, oh yeah, there it is. Yeah.
You two are completely mad. And I'm going to try the bubble gum. So this one's probably really bad for you because it's got every E number on the sun, has it or not?
Who cares? It's delicious. It's really nice.
Oh, that's so refreshing. It's speciality in fine food. Everybody's going on about health all the time, and we've got this high impact protein. This is full of E numbers and they don't care.
No, it's really, really nice. We love it. It's Amy's and my favourite.
Oh, it tastes of bubblegum. I haven't had bubblegum since I was a kid.
Yeah.
It tastes exactly of that pink bubblegum that used to get, that used to chew forever. I don't even know what was in it.
No, neither do we. But no, it's really, really nice. We find that it takes people right back to their childhood, and that's the nice thing about it. But also, kids really, really love it now. So, yeah, great for all ages. Great for us.
Well, are there any other interesting flavours that you've got that thankfully you haven't brought with you?
We have Christmas dinner. That's very strange. Great for like a stocking filling with it.
Christmas dinner. So what does that taste of? Christmas dinner chocolate?
Yeah, you get the flavours in layers. So at first it will taste like chocolate. Then you'll get sort of, you'll get a bit of sage and onion. And then at the end you'll get garlic and pepper and salt. It tastes very stuffingy. Like stuffing, yeah.
Any more?
Oh gosh, what other ones do we do? Oh, pizza. Now, pizza chocolate. Yes, that was an exclusive request from one of the clients that we work with, and they sell that in their store. It's just gone in this Christmas, but it tastes like pizza cheese string, but with chocolate. It's really weird. But actually, it's not as...
tomato-y?
It's not as sort of bad as I thought it would be. I would eat it, but I eat weird things, so...
Yes. I think I'm going to end it there because I just don't know what to say. I really don't know what to say. Where can we get these chocolates if you're insane enough to want to buy them? Although they are great fun.
Well, no, you can get them online direct from us on our website, but there's a number of retailers all over the country. You're probably best off looking on the website in order to find out where exactly we are at the moment. If you follow us on social media, we'll let you know of any new outlets, but we're looking forward to hopefully getting some more southern retailers after this event.
I don't even know what to say. So you're called The Chocolate Smiths. Your website is?
It's www.thechocolatesmiths.com.
So if you want to look at pizza chocolate, Christmas dinner chocolate, bacon chocolate, and the most bizarre cheese and cracker chocolate, I suggest you go and check out The Chocolate Smiths. Thank you, Amy, and thank you, Steffi.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm with Paul, one of the producers of the Food Talk Show, and he's delighted to be sitting here. If it's a beer product or a curry product, he's in heaven, really. And we're sitting with Shehzad, who's from Yorkshire. He's from Shipley in Yorkshire. And you've got a family history of making curries, haven't you?
We have, yes. So I'm from the Agra Group. We launched, we started in the restaurant industry about 40 years ago. My uncle started the restaurant chain, which grew. My father and my uncles got involved soon after, and it grew over the years. And we've got 13 restaurants in and around Yorkshire now. So we're one of the biggest chain of restaurants in the UK now. And a few years ago, we launched this range of cooking sauces, which...
They've really taken off in Yorkshire, and the thing is, you shouldn't just keep good things to Yorkshire. You do need to share them, Shehzad. You know, don't you need to get past Yorkshire?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the brand's well known in Yorkshire. You know, it's recognised, but outside of Yorkshire, nobody really knows us that well.
So it's about time you shared all your lovely stuff, if you don't mind, for the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why we've got these tasters here, and that's why we're here at the Speciality and Fine Food Show.
So just explain to me, you've got three here. These are your cooking sauces. And you've got two chicken dishes, I think, and a chickpea. Yep. Can you just explain what we've got in front of us?
Yes, so we've got the achari sauce cooked with chicken here, which has lime pickle in it. So it's got the quite a spicy and a tangy edge to it. We've got Hyderabadi, which is more of an aromatic dish. It's got cream in it as well. It's one of our most popular dishes in the restaurants.
Paul, start have a quick, while we're talking, you have a slice of that, a little bit of that and see what you think.
And then the third one we've got is handi, which is cooked with an onion base. So it's a very traditional dish. It's cooked in the style of the food that we have at home. So that's really the inspiration for most of our recipes is home style cooking.
So you've just tasted that one, Paul, chicken. You just wiped your brow then. I know it's hot in here, but is it because the curry's hot, or is it because it's just hot in here generally?
Hot in here generally, but it was delicious, actually. It's not sort of below the back of your throat of hot. It is medium in strength, and you can taste all sorts of different flavours going on in there. Definitely taste the lime pickle, one of my favourites actually so far.
I'm not a great fan of lime pickle, but I will taste that in a minute. I've just tasted this one again. For a cooking sauce, that's really complicated. Have a taste of that, Paul. It hasn't got any horrible aftertaste at all. It's really lovely.
Yeah, it hasn't, and the secret is in the cooking method and the tarka method, making sure that the spices and the onions have been fried properly and cooked properly before adding the meat and completing the dish.
Sometimes when you're cooking those spices, and particularly when you're cooking onions and you're cooking them too quickly, you can overcook them and they just get really bitter, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. They can get too bitter, and we make sure that we don't do that in the restaurants, and with the sauces we make sure that everything is cooked to perfection.
Pork, it's just gone straight to the back of my throat. Taste that one. That's nice. A really nice sort of chilli warmth kick there.
Exactly, completely different, as you say, from the sauce that's out of a jar. It is just phenomenal.
And so is it a jar? Is it in a glass jar? Or is the way you sell it?
Yeah, so all of the sauces that we make, they're in a 300-gram glass jar. And we find that, you know, that's the most effective way of getting the premium quality of the product across.
It feels to me, though, I mean, I've used some really nice spice mixes and not very many that are good, but some really good ones with some excellent spices. And then I just do my own stuff. But this would actually come out of a jar. I just need to fry some chicken and some vegetables or chickpeas. It would actually come out of the jar like that.
Absolutely. So all of the sauces are really, really easy to use. You simply need to just fry some chicken or some meat or some veg. They go great with beef as well. And then once you've fried them up or browned them, you add the jar of sauce and then add a little bit of water. Let it cook up for another 10 to 15 minutes, and then you've got a meal for three to four people. The Hyderabadi, the first one that you tasted, which has actually been a massive hit at the show.
I'm not surprised. I really like that. I really do like it.
It's amazing. You know, I surprise myself every time I taste it as well. It's really, really nice.
I surprise myself. I love that.
But it is very, very nice. And, you know, I'm working long hours, and I use these at home myself. They are fantastic. I love them.
Paul, would you actually go, you know, do that, buy some veg or some chicken or some fish and use those? Because I'm astounded at how good they are.
Definitely. I mean, from a male point of view, we like cooking to be easy, and that is tasty and so quick and easy to do. So I would.
You could con somebody that you'd actually made it from scratch, couldn't you?
Definitely. You buy all the trimmings with it and you could get away with that, definitely.
Add some like fresh coriander on the top, maybe sprinkle it some nuts sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So coriander or some sliced ginger to garnish the dish. You know, we've had chefs actually at the show commenting how amazing they are and saying they've been cooking Indian food for 15, 20 years and they can't cook, you know, they can't create the flavours that we've got in some of these sauces.
Well, I have to admit, I didn't think I was going to be impressed, actually, because it's such a hard thing to pull off. But I'm going to go over to your stand, actually, and make a note of where I can get hold of this stuff. And I really wish you luck with spreading it, because you shouldn't just keep to Yorkshire. It's not fair. You should make sure the rest of us can get it. So if I was a supermarket or you know, a farm shop or somebody wanted to stock your stuff, where can I find out more about you?
So to find out more about us, the easiest way is to visit our online shop and website, which is agrafoods.com.
How do you spell that?
AAGRAH foods.com. And anyone can place an order. We do courier delivery to your home, so anybody in the country can order. And then for stocking inquiries, our contact details are all on the website, and all inquiries come directly to myself. And I've got a small team of people that are working with me to really drive that as well.
Shazad, you're going to be working even longer hours now, and that was a really silly thing to do. So contact him direct. No, go onto the website, and if you can't remember how it's spelled, if you just go on to foodtalk.co.uk, you'll find all about agri-foods there. Really good stuff. Well done, Shazad.
Yeah, thank you.
So they were Sue's favourite interviews from the 2 days at this speciality show, and now we, the producers, have put our heads together, and we've got two that we think you might like as well. We've got the Cranes Brothers with their cranberry liqueur, and we've also got La Befana Beer Bread. So definitely take a listen to those two now.
We're joined by Dominique Erickson from La Befana Beer Bread here at the Speciality and Fine Food Fair. And she's got a lovely tray of bread in front of us. We're going to have a bit of a taster later on. Dominique, tell me all about this wonderful bread. And the beer element is very interesting, particularly to me.
Okay, excellent. So basically, La Befana Beer Bread is a company that produces a variety of beer bread mixes. They come in 5 different flavours. And the idea of the beer is that you take one of our mixes and you pour it into a bowl and you simply add a 330ml beer.
So it's a bread mix, right?
Exactly.
And you combine it with beer instead of with water. That's an interesting idea.
Yes, we call it beer bread. In South Africa, that's where I'm from, obviously. Beer bread is quite a common thing. So we're trying to introduce it here in the UK. While we say you can use beer we think works best, but if you want to, you can actually use cider or soda water. So it's the bubbles that make the bread.
So it's not the fact that the beer is brewed with yeast and there's often yeast in bread. It's just, you know, part of the flavouring and part of the, you know, the production of it.
Exactly, that's right, yes.
And do you need something with bubbles? Because that's part of this process, isn't it? You make quite a lot of bread, don't you?
I don't make it myself. My partner makes the bread and does it, you know, in that kind of artisan sourdough-y kind of way. But this looks a lot easier, to be honest, which is great.
So your partner, Kylie, don't bother making bread this week. Take one of Dominique's. There's La Befana Beer Bread Original, and you should give that a bit of a go.
I'm definitely going to give it a go.
Well, what makes this even easier is, you know, obviously if somebody is a bread maker, there's a lot of stuff involved in that in terms of kneading, proving, a lot of time and everything. With this, it's simply add the beer, quick mix, and into a tin and in the oven for 50 minutes. So there's no kneading and there's no proving, and you obviously don't need a bread machine with it.
That's brilliant.
No kneading and no proving, you're joking.
No, absolutely not.
A number of times I sit with my bowl of bread in the conservatory thinking, it's not even, you know, half yet, let alone double. Come on, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up.
Well, the thing about the traditional artisan way of doing it is, you know, it is kind of therapeutic, and it does take a long time. So, you know, you kind of get the pros and the cons of it there. This sounds like just brilliantly simple and easy and convenient.
Yes, I mean, you do get the traditional bakers who will turn their nose up at it, saying that the beauty of making bread is the kneading and the proving, and we can't take that away from them. Go ahead and make it. But this is for somebody who wants a quick fix, can't be bothered, yeah, a bit lazy on a Sunday morning after too many beers on a Saturday night. This is perfect. It also, funny enough, works really well in a barbecue, as long as the barbecue's got a lid, and you put it inside a baking tin into the barbecue, and you get like a really nice smoky flavour.
That's a brilliant idea. I like the sound of that. So you've got a range of flavours. What are they?
So we've got five flavours. We've got rosemary and garlic, a chili tomato, a smoked onion, a garlic and onion, and we've just introduced the original flavour, which is just seasoned with a bit of salt and pepper. And the idea is, if anybody wants to add their own ingredients to that mix, they can do. So cheese, pesto, nuts work really, really well. Also, today, you know, craft beers are kind of taking over the world, and they tend to have such weird and wonderful flavours. So the original flavour will really bring out the flavour of the beer that you use.
And I'm going to try some.
Go ahead. And while you do that, Sue, I was just going to ask, is there a particular type of beer which works the best with this? I mean, are we looking at a lager or an ale or something pale or dark? Any tips?
Well, any beer works as long as it's got bubbles in it. People have been known to use Guinness, and they really enjoy it. But any beer works. A lager probably works better. But a dark ale, a deep ale would work, but I think a lager's probably best. I mean, anything in the back of your fridge, a Foster's, whatever. I'm not advertising Foster's, whatever.
Or those beers that somebody brings around for dinner and you really hate them and they've been sitting there for ages. Perfect.
This is a great way to use those up, yeah. The one that I've got here, it's got a little bit of a kick to it. So is that the chili one?
I don't think I've put the chili in there, but you might have the I'm not sure which one that is, sorry. Is it this one?
I think I've got original. I think what's interesting for me is not just the taste, it's the smell of it. You can smell the beer. Actually.
No, this must be the salt and pepper, the original one.
That's the original one you've got there. This is the rosemary and garlic one here, which people really love. It's quite strong in flavour, and they say it reminds them of stuffing, Christmas stuffing.
Yeah, I'm going to try that one. Mm. Oh, I've just had that salt and pepper come through on that last one.
Yeah, the stuffing one is, you know, it's very, very herby.
Mm. Mm. That is like my mum's stuffing that she does at Christmas. Yeah. That is exactly the same.
I get that a lot.
Mm.
That's very good.
Yeah, really, really nice. I can't really taste the beer flavour to it at all.
Mm.
But I don't know, is that's not the point of it. I guess it's supposed to taste like bread rather than taste like beer.
We've actually used lighter beers on this occasion just for the sake of this event. I mean, you can use stronger beers. We've used quite weaker beers because sometimes people will say, oh, we don't want the taste of the beer. But if you use a stronger beer, you certainly will get the flavour.
Well, I think it's a really interesting idea. Are you going to ask really nicely if you can take one of these packets home? Because I'd like you to make one and then tell me what you think. Well, you won't, will you?
No, I think I could probably manage this. You know, it's mix and beer. The only trouble is going to be getting enough beer left over for me to make some bread.
Buy a bigger beer and use some of it, and then you can drink the beer while you wait.
That is the top tip for today. Buy a bigger beer or more beer.
Top tip for today. Oh, that's brilliant. Well, definitely look out for La Befana Beer Bread. And where do we go to find this?
So currently we are on Amazon Prime. that's where we stocked, so please go ahead there. We've also got a website, which you could obviously buy through directly. But hopefully you'll see us in shops soon after this event.
Fantastic. And can you just direct us to the website? What's the URL?
Yeah, sure. So it's www.labefanabeerbread.co.uk.
Alternatively, just go on to the Food Talk Show website and it'll be on there.
That's a much better way to do it.
It's a bit of a mouthful, sorry.
It's fantastic. Really, really lovely product. I hope the rest of the show goes well for you. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks Dominique.
I'm lovely to meet you too. Thank you.
So here we are back at the Speciality and Fine Food Fair, and we've made a new friend, Sue.
I have made a new friend. Well, he's one of a twin. You've got a twin, haven't you? Are you the more handsome twin or the less handsome twin?
Well, that's quite a question, isn't it? I mean, it's down to the eye of the beholder, really. Yeah.
Are you identical twins?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, the
it
reason
might have been the other guy I met then yesterday. Maybe
you met the other guy. That's why you were confused.
Anyway.
So we're sitting here with Ben from Cranes. And they make a wonderful selection of boozy drinks, which is why we've now become best friends. He's brought a whole selection of different things with us with him today. So we're looking at a range of different craft flavored ciders and a cranberry and blood orange liqueur. Ben, tell us all about it.
So basically, me and my brother were at university, different ends of the country. I was down in Exeter, and my brother was up in Leeds. I was drinking a lot of cider down there. He was drinking everything and anything. And drinking cranberry juice to kind of like compensate for that. So we kind of came together and we kind of like started developing a cranberry cider, a slightly healthier version. And basically, we're both obviously quite health conscious as well. We play rugby, we gym, and we wanted to produce something that wasn't just full of sugar. So we started producing this kind of like slightly healthier, less sugar, using natural fruit sugars. So that means that there's 30% fewer calories, but also it's like more crafted, less sweet. So we kind of that's where it started developing. We had the cranberries, so we then started developing with different products with that, and we came across this cranberry blood orange liqueur, and we just felt like we had to start producing it and selling it.
And why cranberries? Because this is the thing that runs through it. Did you just hit on the cranberry thing, started making these liqueurs, and then started to look at how else you could extend the cranberry? You know, the sort of, obviously you'd already sourced it and all that sort of stuff. Is that how it started?
Yeah, basically. I mean, we like cranberry juice. My brother drinks a lot of it, and that's where it kind of all came from. And we started producing the ciders, and, you know, we have the source of cranberries already. And, I mean, the brand name is called Cranes, because originally cranberries were called craneberries back in the 1600s, because the flower resembled a crane's head. So it all came from that. So, you know, with that aspect in there, we felt like it was the right move to develop into different drinks that involve cranberries.
Really interesting stuff. And Sue, you were saying that you were chatting to the guys yesterday about the way that they farm the cranberries, and that there's an interesting thing going on there.
Yeah, because you've sort of collaborated with a whole number of people, and then you've as you grow, then one source of cranberries isn't enough, isn't it? You've got to start finding and keep the quality, and I think that's the hard bit.
Yeah. Last year we went out to Wisconsin in America. They produce 60% all of America's cranberries. They've got the right climate for it, and so we went out there. We visited four different farms, a couple of kind of smaller family farms, and went around there, had a better understanding of how the cranberries are grown, you know, how they're harvested, because it is a really, really interesting process. So we went out there and have a really understanding and have a better connection with our hop suppliers.
And now, one of the things that you and I were talking about yesterday is the good thing about that is you can scale up, because you know that you've got, you know, your source of supply is going to be okay. And that does help you when you suddenly were to get an amazing order here at Speciality and Fine Food Fair today. Somebody says, can I have a couple of thousand bottles of this? You actually can scale up.
Exactly. We have the capabilities. I mean, on our own brewery, we have quite high capacity, but also we do outsource some of our production in regards to our bottling to Brothers in Somerset as well, so we have quite high capacities. I mean, we had a batch coming back to us last week, and 60,000 bottles, so we have quite high capacity.
That's quite a lot to get rid of, isn't it?
That is. There's quite a lot of drinking to be done there.
Talking of drinking to be done, do you want to try it?
Yeah, we'd love to, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the liqueur, isn't it, Ben? Is it?
Yes.
Yeah. So try that. That's really nice, and that's with blood orange.
That's right, yeah. So we started with just the cranberries, but then the blood orange really smooths out the cranberries, so it's just really nice. Not only have it on its own, but you have it in Prosecco, you have it in a Cosmopolitan, but it's just really, really lovely and smooth.
And is there a spirit base in there as well, or is it?
Yeah, so it's grain spirit. So it's basically vodka. Yeah, basically vodka, but it's grain spirit, so we like to go for, because you have potato spirit or you have grain spirit, and grain spirit, really nice.
Yeah, on the nose, very, very kind of sharp, but you can smell that oranginess to it as well. I'm going to have a bit of a sip.
And that is 20% volume, so it's not like a real liqueur, as in 30 or 40%, is it? It's sort of like a fortified wine, almost.
Yeah, oh, that's really, really nice. Not too sweet. I had some other liqueur earlier today, and just, you know, it was like this massive sugar hit. But that's really, really subtle, really, really tasty.
That's the thing is, most spirits, you know, gin, vodka will be 35-40%. But a lot of liqueurs that, you know, have been blended, they tend to be around the 20%. You've got kind of the bigger names like Chambord, they're 16.5%. You've also got Incasis as well, that's around the same. So it's kind of like hit with those.
But definitely something to add to Prosecco or a cocktail.
Yeah, well, they have a whole load of cocktail recipes on the side of the box, which I think is a really nice idea, because it's a new product. It's something that most people would probably not have tried before or seen before. I don't know if there's anything else out there like it.
I think there's some kind of distilleries that will make kind of like unique different products, but it's just kind of like the distillery. They might have like a cranberry liqueur, but there's no actual cranberry blood orange liqueurs out there that are branded. So we are quite unique, and that's a good thing. You know, around Christmas time especially, or kind of like birthdays or anything, people, you know, trying to look for a present is perfect. Yep. You know, that you can buy that, and you've got all the different recipes on the side of the box. It's perfect, really.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And where do the blood oranges come from? Are they also, and the other fruit, is that also from the US, or is there any of it locally grown?
No, so the blood orange, that comes from Spain, Spain or Italy, but the cranberries are from America, yeah. So.
Well, and if you want to get hold of it, where do you go?
So the best place, if you're just buying for yourself, it's best is on our website, www.drinkcranes.co.uk. We've launched in all the Dobby's garden centres recently. We're in a Fenix, a couple of Fenixes. Oh, we're definitely in the Colchester one. But we only launched a liqueur a year and a half ago, so it's still quite new and finding new places. So there's, you know, keep an eye out for it. Hopefully, we'll see it more and more.
Did you tell me it was also in Costco? Did I get that right?
Yeah, so we're doing a Costco roadshow, so we're going around to all their flagship stores. The liqueur's only been sold there when we're there and doing tasters, but then the ciders, we're looking at doing a mixed case with them, hopefully launching that as soon as possible.
Very interesting kind of distribution strategy. A lot of the people that we speak to, they want to get into the small places and to, you know, have that one-on-one kind of thing, but selling in bulk is a really interesting idea.
Well, the good thing is, I mean, we were approached by Costco asking if we wanted to do these roadshows, and when you've got opportunities like that in front of you, you don't turn it down. And the beauty is they have got that volume, so, you know, if we do get listed by them, you know, we'll hit some really high volumes, meaning we can, you know, get the scales of economy as well, which helps us with our margin and everything. So as a business, it just made perfect sense.
Fantastic stuff.
Good luck with it.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you want to go and buy some yourself, drinkcranes.co.uk. Fantastic stuff and a fantastic website.
Thanks a lot, guys.
So there you have it, Speciality Fine Food 2017. Thank you so much to all the lovely producers and people involved in food and drink that we met over the 3 days. I've definitely put a bit of weight on, but I've got a nice contented feel about me. And the UK scene for food and drink is really exciting at the moment. So again, thank you to everybody we met, and well done to the organisers of Speciality Fine Food Fair. Wouldn't like to do that. It's become huge, but it's really worthwhile. I hope you enjoyed listening to who we met over the last couple of days, and we look forward to getting back to the normal format for the Food Talk Show next week. See you then.